He's another person, another writer, who has greatly influenced the way that we're seeing ISIS and the way that we can understand what drives ISIS and where they come from, what motivates them. And Carl joins me now. Carl, who can we blame for ISIS?
There are many factors leading into ISIS. The primary one has been the failure of local political systems, so the regimes in Iraq and Syria. But the invasion, of course, has shaped how that's come about. But a lot of the people in ISIS that are running ISIS are from the Saddam Hussein regime. They're from the security sector of that regime. And they have been Islamized in the last years of that regime.
I think that's really interesting. And you wrote a brilliant piece in the New York Times, Who Can We Blame for ISIS? And you point to Saddam Hussein directly.
Yes, I think he's a very large factor in how it's been shaped, mostly because, as I say, the people running it are from his security sector. They're the senior military and intelligence officials of that regime. And what he did to secure himself, to secure his regime in its last years during the long war with Iran and then during the sanction system with the turn to a form of Salafism. And that is, it very deeply affected the society. It reshaped it. He made clerics very powerful locally, especially in the Sunni areas where they hadn't been before. And these people then went on to lead the insurgency in the aftermath of the regime.
Which is ironic, and we think of Saddam and the Ba'athist regime as being secular, and yet he did this unholy alliance, literally, with very extreme version of Islam, hence the problems we have today.
I think so. It was partly a way to save himself. One thing was during the war with Iran, because Iraq has a Shia majority population, the message from the Khomeini regime that said Saddam was an atheist and an unbeliever and infidel and they should rise up against him. You can see in internal party documents that the regime knows this is damaging them. This is having an effect. The population is dissenting from them, and they aim to move closer to the population. And they also aim to gain more regional legitimacy, which comes first. They change foreign policy first to align with Islamists abroad, especially the Muslim Brotherhood.
So is this what's happening? Is this also what's happening, Carl, in Saudi Arabia, where you've got the royal family who have allowed the Wahhabi, the very extreme Wahhabi clerics in Saudi Arabia, to manage and police a version of Sharia law there and spread it across the world?
Yes. Well, in part, the thing is with the Saudi regime, it's always been based on twin pillars of the Wahhabi ulama and the House of Saud. And the House of Saud, in a sense, gets legitimacy from the clerics. But it redefined jihad in the Wahhabist form as proselytization. So it stopped it, because the original, when they conquered Najd and the Hejaz in the 20s, it stopped at Transjordan, which was then run by Britain. And the Saudis decided to have a regime within the international order rather than, as ISIS is, one that rejects it.
The point is that ISIS predates 2003 and the disastrous invasion of Iraq. If we know that, how does it help us deal with ISIS?
It just means, again, that you can't focus on it. It's one of those where people think because going in caused it, therefore withdrawing must be the solution. And it really isn't. In a sense, we were drawn in the first place because something like ISIS was metastasizing in the region. And the invasion of Iraq was, in a large way, a failed attempt to stop it. And withdrawing allowed it to proceed in a lot of ways.
What do we do? I mean, what do we do now? What would be the most effective thing?
It is to prop up local Sunni forces. It's the areas ISIS rules over are the tribes and the Sunnis in Iraq and Syria. And you need to give them the ability to rule their local areas. They're not going to help us to defeat ISIS if the alternative is sectarian Iranian-run death squads.
And how do we do that? That's the problem. How do we get into Syria without it being an invasion on the ground, which is exactly what ISIS want to recruit, isn't it? They want to say that we are, that this is a clash of civilizations. So how do we get into Syria to do that?
There are many moderate forces on the ground, especially the rebellion in Syria, and there are tribes in Iraq, which we worked with previously to defeat ISIS. It would involve sustained engagement, and it would involve provision of weapons. It would involve in Syria some kind of no-fly zone to stop the repeated attacks from the regime and from Russia on the populations, which is, for as long as those air attacks go on the populations, Assad remains their priority, not ISIS. and there's nothing we can do. As I say, while those attacks are going on, we can't get the population to turn on ISIS because it's just not their priority.
Right. So it's stop the attacks and then deal with Assad, Bashar al-Assad.
Yes, Assad has to go first. Once he's gone, the population can then form around some kind of interim administration that can defeat ISIS. The center of gravity here is in Syria, largely. Iraq has slightly separate problems, but there are tribes there that worked with us last time and could be recruited again.
So if you had a message to the New Zealand people and to the New Zealand government, we're involved in training Iraqi soldiers. We've got about just over 100 of our own soldiers there training. What would you say to New Zealanders is the most effective thing a country like New Zealand can do?
It would be to New Zealand has been very good in providing special forces services in Afghanistan and places, and it would be to provide this capability to the Iraqis, to provide local people the ability to have a normal life outside of either ISIS or Iran. So it's just about finding local people who can be worked with.
Carl, thank you for joining us. It's extremely informative, and we're discussing this all morning about the origins of ISIS, where they come from, what motivates them, and then what we can do to stop them. That was Carl Orton. He's an associate fellow at the Henry Jackson Society. Again, a seminal, brilliant piece in the New York Times called "The Who Can We Blame for ISIS and Saddam." You can put a lot of the blame straight back to Saddam. Google that piece in the New York Times by Carl Orton. It really is well worth a read.